Hello, and welcome to the Superhero by Design podcast, a show where we interview real-life superheroes. My name is Ace, and I'll be your host. My next guest is a first-generation immigrant who has taken the American dream by the horns and has done what other people have done throughout the generations of this amazing country. From having a negative balance in his bank account to becoming financially free, this man embodies what hard work, sacrifice, and adding value to others is all about. He and his brother are not afraid to speak their minds, put themselves out there, and fight the good fight. Let's give a superhero by design welcome to Daniel Kwok.
Wow, Daniel, that's the intro, man.
Welcome to the show.
You just follow me around everywhere, man. That was awesome.
Daniel and his brother Nick went from 0 to 75 units in their first year of real estate. Since then, they have founded and ran several successful businesses and coaching programs. They also mentor people on how they too can become financially free. You can find them as motivational speakers, traveling all over to share their knowledge of personal finance, real estate investing, and property management. Did I mention they're also authors? For more information on them and their services, check out their website at thekwokbrothers.com. And for those of you listening, Kwok is spelled K-W-A-K. You can also follow them on Instagram at the Kwok Brothers, and also check out their YouTube channel and podcast, Kwok Brothers Freedom Files. Whew, that was a mouthful. All right, Daniel.
Fantastic job, man. Great job.
I appreciate that. So you're experienced. You know how this works. I have to start with an off-the-wall question. You know, something to get you off your balance. So you ready for it?
Let's do it, man. I like it.
Awesome, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. So I'm grateful. That's the word of the day today, man, is I'm grateful. You know, with Memorial Day and just, you know, the ability for us to, I mean, literally just be out, be healthy, breathe air. You know, I can't ask for anything more than that.
I couldn't agree with you more. We are recording on Memorial Day, and I am so blessed to have Daniel on here. I know a lot of people take the day off, but like you said before we started recording, if you don't love what you're doing, then why the heck are you doing it in the first place? And we are so blessed here on Memorial Day to celebrate those that have sacrificed their lives and their families so that we can be free, so we can have freedom. I know you talk a lot about freedom and where we are today in this crazy climate. And I know that you value today as much as anyone. And we're just going to jump right into it. So you and your brother weren't born in the U.S. I had mentioned that you guys immigrated here when you were really young. Can you just walk us through essentially the beginning, where you guys came from, how you, the American experience was for you being a first-generation immigrant growing up here in the United States, and how you got to where you are today? I know there's a whole, it's a long story, but definitely give us what sticks out in your mind from your origin story.
No way. Hey, of course. Absolutely. By the way, I love that you mentioned that we're both working on the Memorial Day, right? I mean, we probably should take the day off, but you know, I always tell people, it's like when you find out what you really love to do and what your purpose is, most people don't even know what their superpower is until they figure that out. You know, and I think that's so important. But that being said, so my origin story, which everybody has one, whether you want to admit it or not. So, you know, we immigrated to the United States when I was 5 years old. It was 1999. And, you know, long story short, we were, poor would be an understatement, right? Like we had one of those living arrangements where you flicker the light on and the cockroaches all expand to the outwards of the room, right? And it was like a tiny one bedroom. I think it was like maybe 700 square feet. I remember rent being like $480. We weren't living in the best part of town. And by the way, Chicago, right? Like that's where I'm from. That's where I still am. That's, I consider that my hometown. And it was rough. We got robbed multiple times and, you know, we wake up and some of our items were missing, which is unbelievable because the little that we had, it's like, why would anyone take the little that we have? But I'll share two stories that really kind of helped shape who I am today and still shapes my future to this day. So I remember when I was 6 years old, we lived next to this is probably a family friendly podcast. So I'll say we lived next to a gentleman's entertainment center. Let's put it that way. And so, you know, I'm 6 years old at the time. And, you know, when I first moved to America, I don't know what it was, but I had a really tough time sleeping. Like I would stay up Like, I mean, there'd be nights where, I mean, I would literally just stay up all night just looking out at the window, and my parents just be like, hey, like, you woke up early. It's like, yeah, I did, you know? And so there was one night where it was like, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. It was just really late. I remember my parents were sleeping. My brother was sleeping as well in the other room. And, you know, mind you, my brother and I, we don't have beds at this time. Like, we're literally just sleeping in sleeping bags on the floor, hardwood. And I'm looking out at the window and I see this guy. And, you know, it doesn't take, you know, more than a six-year-old to know that someone's wearing expensive clothing and someone has money, right? Like, this guy's got a custom suit on. He's got a nice shiny watch, you know, and he's getting in this car. And all I remember was the car had an L as the logo, which I now know today as Lexus. And, you know, he's stumbling out of this, you know, gentleman's entertainment center, and he starts driving. And mind you, he's not far. Like, he's probably maybe like 10 feet away. Right. And I'm, you know, our apartment was on like the third or fourth floor from what I remember. So, I mean, I could see him in great detail. And, you know, disappointing thing is he had a wedding ring on, right, on his finger as he's stumbling out. And then he just starts swerving away. Right. And I look 90 degrees to my left and I see my parents sharing a twin size bed in a room that quadrupled as our living room, dining room, kitchen, and their bedroom. And, you know, my dad's the type of guy where it's like he would give the shirt off his back if he had, you know, if he only had one shirt. That's the type of guy that he was, right? Oh, wow. And I remember asking myself the questions, like, how differently would the world look if that guy who stumbled out of the Gentleman's Entertainment Center had the heart that my dad did? You know, the heart for people, the heart to want to take care of his fellow man, and, you know, a purpose-driven guy. And if there's one thing that I would describe my dad as, man, that was that guy mission-driven. Like, he moved to a whole new country without knowing the language with his whole family just to fulfill a mission that God had for him, which, in, you know, by the way, just to give you some context, he's a church pastor. So he was a pastor and he's still a pastor today. So that's what he did. And so that was one story that changed my life. I was 6 years old. I asked myself, and I still ask myself that question even to this day at 29 years old. And the second story was, I remember being 16 years old, right? So fast forward 10 years. I'm 16 years old. You know, again, as you know, my dad's a church pastor. And, you know, my dad has a lot of friends. He's got a very expansive network. And I remember he always had special guest speakers come to our church. And, you know, there'd be missionaries, there'd be, you know, other pastors, there'd be nonprofit leaders, and all these guys who just wanted to make the world a better place, regardless of whether they were doing it for Jesus or whether they were doing it for, I don't know, just for their own reasons. They wanted to make the world a better place. I mean, you're talking about guys who are like living in places like Chad, Africa, Kenya, right? Like, I mean, just these places where, you know, there's areas where there's poverty, you know, and even Calcutta, right? And Papua New Guinea, right? Like, all these places where it's just unfortunate. Haiti, especially, for crying out loud. And the common denominator that they all shared was they all needed money. And, you know, in my mind, I'm 16 years old and I'm like, well, I've met hundreds and thousands of guys who all are doing amazing things, whether they're, you know, medical professionals, whether they're pastors, missionaries, you name it. And they all need money, you know, especially for the things that they're doing. Why doesn't someone just be the guy that just has a lot of money and they could just allow all these other thousands and hundreds of people to do what they do best? Why is everyone trying to be a missionary and all? Right? Not that that's bad, but for me, it just, my logical brain was like, it just seems so much better if we just had a group of people who had a lot of money who could just make, you know, wouldn't that be much more productive? And so I did that. And I read an article by Forbes magazine saying that out of the top 1% of people, like 86% or something like that, made their money investing in real estate. So I was like, man, like that's what I got to do, you know? And don't get me wrong, like, I had no money at the time. Like, when I was 18 and I got started in this, I had, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, I had negative $187.65. But like I said, you know, dreams and goals aren't hit by resources. They're hit by resourcefulness. And a lot of people don't understand that that's the superpower that everybody has, regardless they admit it or not.
No, I love you sharing that. Being in real estate myself, the thing that I love most of it, and you hit the nail on the head, because the quote unquote American dream, I talk about the American dream a lot. I was living what I considered the American dream. I have several degrees, structural engineer. I worked for consulting firms, all of that, and being in the office and everything all day in and day out. Nothing wrong with it at all, but I found myself just progressively getting more and more miserable because it was is this it? Like, I got my degrees. I went to freaking UC Berkeley, for crying out loud, like top university in the country for structural engineering that year. And then, you know, I rode this high and then boom, like in an office job, office politics, doing something that I was not passionate about. I was doing something my parents wanted me to do and thought, you know, they wanted a good, safe, secure job. And then the Great Recession happened. Nothing safe, secure, but I found real estate myself. And the thing I love about real estate is that it brings you passive income right now. You don't have to wait till you're 65, 70, 75 years old if you make it that far. And I love what you guys do with real estate. I just love what you guys share about how you help other people reach financial freedom. And we're going to get into that. Thank you for sharing that. It's so crazy because given your situation growing up, people always put meaning to their stories, right?
Yeah.
And I love how you link two things together. Rich guy, your dad's heart, and put the two things together. Like, here's this guy married at a gentleman's club, probably cheating on his wife. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not here to judge, but he has money. He has a Lexus, nice clothes. And what is he doing with his life? Is he living a purpose-driven life? Whereas your family financially at that time is struggling, but they have open hearts. I'm a Christian as well. Your dad is a pastor serving his community, serving people. And why not? Like, I agree with you 100%. Why not marry the two together? Because I don't believe, people say money is the root of all evil. Yeah. Love of money is the root of all evil. That's a big Christian thing, but I don't subscribe to that. Because money gives you options. It gives you time. It gives you the ability to share. Because if you're poor and you love to share, well, if you're going to be rich, you're still going to love to share. If you're greedy and you're poor, you make a ton of money, you're still going to be greedy. And so I really appreciate you sharing those two stories and how the meaning that you've given to them has dictated your life up to today, and it will continue doing that in the future.
Yeah, my wife and I were talking about, and by the way, thank you, man. Thank you for, you know, the words, the kind words that you spoke. But there's a quote that my wife and I were having a really deep conversation about last night. And my wife and I do this a lot. You know, I mean, you know, other couples, you know, have sex. We have deep conversation. Well, we still have sex, but we also have very deep conversation that we really enjoy. And, you know, those are two things that we do in the bedroom that give us pleasure, right? But, you know, we're contemplating and really thinking about this quote by Abraham Lincoln, right? But he says, if you want to test a man's character, don't look at him when he has nothing, give him power. And, you know, I think that's, you know, if there's anything I learned about money and entrepreneurship, and, you know, I'm at the point in my career where I've seen a lot of people get really successful who started at the bottom, you know, and a lot of those individuals, you see who they really are once they have the money, you know. And honestly, you know, that guy that I saw, gosh, 23 years ago now, right, at that gentleman's club, over the years, I've actually learned to have a lot of compassion for him, because chances are there's a lot of pain and aches in his life, and that's kind of the way he copes with it. Now, do I agree with the method? No, absolutely not. I don't agree that you should, you know, dishonor your commitment you make to your spouse just because you have some hurt or ache. You know, like, I don't believe in that. But at the same time, I mean, you said it, man. It's like, what if? It's like, what if we could live in a way where, you know, the resources that we do have were being held from an open hand, and we just ask God, hey, what do you want us to do with it? Do you know all the pains and problems with this world? You know, how can I join you in being able to solve a lot of those problems and fix those issues and help out, you know, your kids, right? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all God's children. So, no, I mean, I appreciate you saying that, man. That means a lot.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest struggles that I deal with, and I'm working through it, but I know a lot of other people deal with, and if you watch the news, the media, you know, mainstream media, all of that, you're going to hear a lot of this. It's that scarcity mindset, that resources are scarce. We're killing the environment. We're killing wild animals, wildlife. And there is truth to that. However, if you approach life with a scarcity mindset that there's not enough, now you start looking inward and trying to hold on to things and control things. And we see it with today's politics, today's politicians. they want to hold on to the old way of doing things. And don't get me wrong, I love the country we live in. I love free enterprise. Like, I'm an entrepreneur myself. But at the same time, you see people with this scarcity mindset. And what if you could look at life in abundance? Like, shit, they print money like it's going out of style. So there is no shortage of money. Money is unlimited. If the government can print it as much as they want, doesn't that technically mean there is an unlimited amount of money out there? And if you start changing your mindset, like, no, there is enough love, there is enough happiness, there is enough money, there is enough grace that we can give other people. Once you start looking at life in those terms, law of attraction says what you give out will come back to you. And I believe that 100%. And so, quick question for you. You said you had a negative amount in your bank account. Was it just the realization of that? You were fed up with growing up poor. What was, like, was there a specific trigger that said, hey, I want to change my situation and take control of my life and move forward?
Yeah, honestly, man, it was, I always tell people, it's like when you grow up poor, you learn poor. You know, you learn the things that keep you poor, right? I mean, I grew up with a lot of, so I have two best friends, they're both Black. And, you know, I grew up around a lot of Black people, which, you know, I love the Black culture, you know, all that stuff. But one of the things that my Black, my best friends, my brothers, that I talk about all the time is especially in the Black community, the lack of passing down financial literacy, right? I mean, when I look at a lot of my friends and, you know, even my wife was Caucasian, right? When she grew up, her parents taught her about money. It's like, hey, you know, this is what a credit card is, right? As soon as she was 18, they made sure she got a credit card and opened up a bank account. And, you know, say, hey, this is how you budget, right? And with a lot of my, you know, my brothers who are in the Black community, they never had that, you know, growing up, right? And, you know, I didn't either, granted, because my parents were very ashamed to talk about money because they didn't have much, right? But, you know, I eventually had to go out and seek and learn and do a lot of those things, right? So I mean, you know, that I believe is ridiculously important, right? But I grew up learning poor. A lot of the things that I was very irresponsible with money. I mean, you know, I was very irresponsible with credit cards. I didn't budget at all. I didn't do any of those things, right? But yet at the same time, I want to go out and change the world. You know, I wanted to go out and, you know, build hospitals and do all these things and do cool projects in third world countries. And it, for me, it was just a simple realization. You know, I there's a great psychologist named Dr. Jordan Peterson who says, you know, like those who try to change the world but can't, you know, put their own house in order is a hypocrite. And I like, that's the conclusion that I came up with at 18 before I even knew who that guy was. I was like, man, like for me to be in the situation that I'm in and still try to change other people's lives, like that's not right. You know, like I can't do that. So it was a lot of, like you said, personal responsibility, self-accountability, awareness, right, that I had to kind of go through. It was like, you know what, like I have to get to a point where I can do that. You know, I have to fix my own, you know, my own house and make my own house in order before I can go out and start changing things. And so that's what I did. And, you know, my journey started with just me learning everything that I could about money, you know, understanding why other people had it and why growing up my parents didn't. And I learned about investing. I learned how, you know, monetary and fiscal policy works. I learned how the economy works. I learned how all, what it is, I learned the rules of the game, right? Like most people are unhappy with the results and they don't even know what the rules of the game are, you know? But the beautiful thing about not only this country, but just life in general is we've got the time to learn these things. Like everybody has at least an hour driving, commuting, right? If you work out, that's another hour right there. Right. So you have potentially 2 hours a day where you can start learning about how the economy works, money, how to budget properly, how to invest, how the banking system actually works here in America. Right. Like, I mean, that's a beautiful thing. Life is long. We have plenty of time to be able to do. Like, I love this perspective. I was thinking about this actually the other morning and how if you actually saw your life as a 24-hour day. So let's say hypothetically you live 80 years. Right. So I Googled it, so it must be true. Yeah, right. The life expectancy for an average American is 80 years. Now, if you work out, take care of yourself, and you know you eat healthy, chances are you're going to live a little longer, right? You might live 90, 95, or maybe even 100, right? My great-grandmother, who I absolutely loved and adored, lived to be 100, which is phenomenal, right? But let's say 80, just for the sake of the example. if you look at your entire life as a 24-hour day format, I'm currently 28. It's currently 8:24 a.m. If you look at life from a standpoint of a 24-hour, like a day, right? If you're 40 years old, you're at noon, right? Like you're at 12 o'clock noon. Like you're eating lunch. You still have the entire afternoon and entire day. Like if you're like, so for example, AC, how old are you?
I'm 40 years old.
You're 40. So you're at noon. Like, that's, dude, right. you have the whole day left, right? Yeah. Like, and for me, it drives me nuts, man, because we live in a day and age where, you know, with TikTok and Instagram, and you have these 19, 20, 23-year-old kids, they're like legit depressed if they're not a millionaire by 25.
Right.
And it just blows my mind. I'm like, guys, if you're 20, it's 6 a.m. for you. Right. Like from that perspective, it's 6 a.m. Most people are still asleep at 6 a.m. Like you haven't even woken up yet to even start your day. And here you are at 20 years old, super depressed, you know, super low self-esteem because you feel like you haven't accomplished enough. And by the way, I know a lot of those TikTok finance influencers, they ain't making the money they're saying they're making on their TikTok. I guarantee you right now. Like I know how business works, right? I think we have now 11 companies that are holding business. And that's aside from our real estate. Like I know what margins are in each industry. They're not making that much money. Unless they're an outlier and they figured something out, then maybe, you know, like my buddies who are in their 50s and 60s who've done this for 30, 40 years have not figured out. Maybe they're making that much, but it's just unbelievable. And I think we need to give ourselves a little bit more grace and a little bit more patience. Like if you're 25 and you're not a loser, like don't worry, you'll be fine, you know?
Man. Yeah, 25 was 15 years ago for me. And all I was worried about at 25, it wasn't about becoming an influencer or being rich. I was just worried about where the next party was and how I was going to get tail that weekend. Like that's honestly all I was thinking about at 25. I can't even imagine going through something like that with the social media we have, TikTok, all of that. One thing you had said about life being long, I think we as humans, and this is a generalization, but generalizations hold truth. We overestimate what we can do in 1 year, but we underestimate what we could do in 10 years. And that goes back to what you said about take an hour, take 2 hours when you're driving or working out and spend that time educating yourself. My message and how I transform my life was by daily discipline, daily habits, and something I made a staple of my life 2 years ago was that every single day I am going to study for an hour a day, whether it's listening to audio, reading a book, going on even YouTube University, but it has to be something that's taking me towards my mission, my goal. And I know a lot of people out there be like, well, I don't know where to start. Like I'm getting overwhelmed. There's all these things going on. Well, first stop watching TikTok. Like first get a clear plan of what it is you want to do. I'm reading a book right now. It's called Love Money, Money Loves You. And it's a consciousness book of money. It's absolutely fantastic. But the thing that they talk about, I just read in one of the chapters, was focus on one thing at a time and complete it before you go on to the next thing. I think today we just have so much information overload that people are like, okay, I'm going to spend a little bit of time here, a little bit of time there, a little bit of time here, a little bit of time there. And you end up not finishing anything or learning really anything or making any sort of progress. So take a look at your life. Take a look at where you want to go and focus on one thing at a time. Like you said, life is long. I'm only at noon. I'm about to go grab lunch right now. Like I have not missed the boat, so to speak. It is still there. The day you decide to take discipline and continue to learn, continue to grow. And if you focus on that every single day, you will be so surprised at how quickly things will start changing for you.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people who are like, well, I don't know where to start. Cause I hear that a lot, right? Honestly, like if you listen to enough podcasts, like people say the same books over and over again, right? Like they say Think and Grow Rich, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's another one, right? And then there's like books that like they tend to pop out here, like the E-Myth, right? Like the one you mentioned, I've heard that a couple times as well, right? But there's a lot of books out there and you could just Google it. You know, and I love what you said. I don't know who said that originally. Maybe it was like Simon Sinek, but you know, like I think the 10-year war is won through your daily battles. Right? Like that's one of the things that my mentor told me. You know, my mentor's 73 years old, by the way, right? And he goes like, look, it's like you know, when I really think about my career, I didn't really hit my prime until I was in my mid 40s. You know, and he goes, it's like, Daniel, like, you're still like, it's like your second, it's like, you know, because he knew I love sports, right? And he also owns an NBA team. But he goes, like, dude, like, you're a second year. Like, you're a second year, third year player, right? Like, you know, if you look at basketball, and I'm a big basketball junkie, right? Like, most guys don't enter their prime until they're like 26, 27 years old. And, you know, there's players now that enter the league at, you know, 19, 20 years old. So you're talking like 6 or 7 years that a player is in the NBA before they hit their prime. And, you know, one of the things that my mentor told me is it's the same thing in business, right? When you're 18 to 40, right? Like, those are like the 6 years that a player is in the NBA and they haven't hit their prime. He was like, my prime, to be honest, was between like 43, 44, like early to mid 40s, till I was about 65. He was like, that's what I would consider my prime. He was like, he was like, on my 67th birthday, he was like, I remember thinking to myself, I'm starting to slow down a little bit. Maybe I should delegate a little bit more and, you know, only work like 4 or 5 hours a day, right? Play more golf, right? Like, just slow, you know, get more sleep, right? Like, he goes, but, you know, 45 to 65, that's a 20-year prime. You can accomplish a lot during that time, you know? So I love what you said. And I think a lot of kids today should, again, give themselves a lot more grace and just start. Whatever it is, just start. Go to every conference, read every book, listen to every podcast you can, and eventually something will find you. Like, we live in a day and age where not only, like, I think, because you're technically a millennial, right?
83. Yeah, the first year, technically.
You're one of the oldest millennials. I'm one of the youngest millennials because I was born 94, right? So we're still in the same generation. I think our generation, man, it's like, we're the first generation where information was so available to us. But now this new generation, like Gen Z, not only is it available to them, but they're the first generation where they get information to them more quickly than any other generation. So not only is it widely available, but their expectation is I want the information to not only be available, but have it come to me faster. Right. So for us, like, we used to read an entire book to get one or two takeaways. For these guys, they're watching a 45-second clip on TikTok or an Instagram reel. And the theory that I have is, and the reason why I think a lot of, you know, especially kids today don't take the action or are afraid to kind of get punched in the mouth by the market, is that when things are given to you so easily, you tend not to do them at a high level. You know, when something comes to you easier or something that's given to you, you tend not to put a whole lot of value on it. And I'm not saying that the kids today are lazy. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I think it's more polarized, right? So the kids who truly are the savage entrepreneurs, they're crushing it because not only is the information there, but it's getting to them faster. So they're creating more success at an early age than ever before. But the kids, so again, the most of the kids, however, like 80-90% of them, right? Like the kids that used to kind of be in the middle, they're now kind of at the low because the information's been so easy. Then it's like, all right, well, I don't, you know, and kind of like what you said, they bounce around to a lot of different things, like whether it's drop shipping, whether it's e-commerce, whether it's crypto, whether it's whatever, like, or real estate, everyone kind of just bounces around the same thing. Like, I have this one kid who DM'd me on Instagram. Like, every 3 months, he DMs me about like a new opportunity. He's like, Daniel, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do you think about it? And my advice is always the same. Like, bro, just pick one. Like, right. Just pick one and just work at it for 5 years. I guarantee you, you'll be much happier in 5 years than going after 19 different things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can relate to that in my real estate career. I've been in it for 10 years and I've done a whole bunch of different things. And so I've become a kind of in real estate, a jack of all trades, master of none, so to speak, because the game of real estate is to become financially free. That's the first step. So now you open up time, you open up your choices, your options, and then you can work. Some people are super passionate about real estate. I love it, but I love it because of the challenge and the creativity. But like you said, there was a guest that I had on a few months ago, and he said something to me that I absolutely loved. He said, pick two or three people. For him, it was Tim Ferriss and one or two other people. I forget the specific people. But anyways, he's like, pick two or three people that you line up similar values with and just study them. Like you said, just pick something and study it. If you want to follow somebody, take that mentorship, take decades and condense it into weeks, if not months. Just follow a couple people that are where you want to be and just focus on them and what they're doing. Because if your values align, then the rest is easy. It's just processes, formulas. Like you said, Why are successful people successful over and over and over again? Because they've figured out the formula and now you can apply it to any part of your life. And so I love what you had said about, yeah, just pick something. And you know what? If that doesn't work out or you don't enjoy it or you want to move on, at least you gave it a fair shake rather than just going, trying something, giving up, going to the next shiny object. Like give it a few years and really push it hard. And you know, the worst case, you're going to learn something. It might not be the business at the end of your career, and it might not be what makes you financially free or wealthy or gives you that life of true happiness, but that's part of the journey. There's been many times that I can look back on past quote unquote failures, but they really weren't failures because they gave me the knowledge that I need to know going forward so that I can be better. I can be more dangerous and I can give a lot more to a lot of people and add much more value than if I didn't experience those things.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. And that actually reminds me of a quote. There's a great marketer. He's kind of known as the godfather of marketing. It's a guy named Dan Kennedy. And one of the things that he says, you know, in regards to marketing is everything works if you do, right? So his philosophy is like, look, like you can do TikTok ads and super fancy algorithms stuff like that. You could also, you know, go door to door and put your business cards on, you know, but everything works as long as you do, you know? And I love that. Like that's actually the mission statement for, you know, my real estate investing education company, First Deal Mentor, right? Where it's a very holistic and experiential form of learning. And I mean, if you want, I can share the story why I even created that company. Because I used to hate coaching. I used to hate teaching people. Like, I was like, why would I want to do that? Like, I just go out and do my own deals and make more money that way. But I've actually come to really enjoy it, you know, and actually really enjoy helping people get those aha moments and get results, right? Like I've got a church pastor, a friend of mine. He was a church pastor for 31 years, no degree in finance, didn't know anything about real estate. And, you know, I gave him a copy of my book and I gave him some of my, you know, teachings and whatever. He texted me like 9 months later. He's like, hey, I've got 3 deals now, you know, that I've done. And today he's like up to 21 doors. Like he's doing an 18 unit building right now. Like his deals on average get like 37% cash on cash return, which is like ridiculous. But you know, like I always try to tell, especially like the younger kids nowadays, because you know, my wife and I always talk about how this new generation's, you know, they have more information and more choice. So therefore they seem more lost than, you know, generations past where I feel like it was much more simpler for us. But you know, I always say like increase the standard that you have on yourself. You know, so you know, I shared a story of my mentor, you know, who owns an NBA team, and I remember asking him, like, hey, what are the things that you look for in players? Like when you draft certain players, or you know, like when you try to identify an all-star, like what are the differences that you see, right, in different things? And he goes, honestly, he's like, Daniel, our NBA players today, like our best players in our team, they do the exact same drills, they run the exact same plays as those kids in high school and college do. They just do it at a higher level, you know. And so one of the things I really try to push on, you know, whether it's my coaching clients at First Deal Mentor, whether it's, you know, the entrepreneurs that I get the ability and the honor and pleasure to be with a mentor, I always say, think about your action items that you have on your board right now, right? And ask yourself, who do I need to talk to, grab lunch with, to do that exact thing at a higher level? Because I, you know, there's a couple of things that I still do today that I did 5-10 years ago, but I do it much faster. I produce more, I get more juice out of them, you know, and it's the compound effect, right? Like Darren Hardy has a great book on that. How if you learn, like if you look at a sales funnel and let's say there's 10 different components in your sales funnel, it doesn't matter what you're selling. You could be selling water bottles or pens or, you know, real estate. But if a sales funnel, if your acquisition process has 8 to 10 different factors, right? So there's like an email launch and then they go to a webinar and then they go to this, whatever. Even just by learning to do one thing at a higher level, your conversion is going to skyrocket. Because now if you do that, if you do step number 3 at a higher level, guess what? Step number 4 through 8 by default is going to be a much more better experience because you did that one thing at a much higher level. So like even when you're just starting out, like, okay, you know, if you decided to do real estate, fantastic, right? You could spend 5-10 years reading books and listening to podcasts. Like you can do all those things. My suggestion is find somebody that is where you want to be in 10 years, take them out to lunch and figure out how you can add value to their life and keep them around, right? Like one of the things I'm really glad I did is at 19 years old, I worked for a property manager for free for 2 years. I made him a lot of money. You know, I actually helped him acquire. And In hindsight, I did majority of the work, even though I got only half the deal, right? I only got 50% equity, but in hindsight, I did like 90% of the work. But it's okay, right? Because like you said, it helped me be who I am today. But I helped him buy like $10 million worth of real estate, you know? But I worked for him for practically free, you know, because I was doing a lot of different things and I was learning a lot, right? So I probably learned more in those 2 years than someone who could, you know, read books or listen to podcasts can if they did it for 10 or 15, you know? And so I always say, figure out what your top two or three priorities are in terms of what you need, right? Like I believe in the Pareto principle. It's like, what's the top 20% result, the 20 action items that's going to deliver 80% of your results, and figure out how you can do those two, three things at the highest level to someone like who's done it for 10, 15, 20 years. What they would like, I love asking mentors, hey, what would you do if you were in my position? Because there's two different types of advice. There's advice and then there's contextual advice, right? There's advice that's given to you based on the uniqueness of your situation. So like, that's one of the things that I ask my mentors on a monthly basis. Like, hey, this is where I'm at with all my companies. You know, you're 73. What would you do if you were in my position, knowing what you know now? And a lot of times the things that they say are the exact same things that I was going to do anyways, but there's three or four different tweaks that he's given me. And a lot of times, like, you know, life and even especially in business is all about the tweaks. Like I had a mentor told me, like, honestly, the difference between a $1 million company and a $10 million company are just three or four different major tweaks. That's all. Because you have the offer, you know, things that work, people will buy it, right? You have your systems and your funnel. You need those things to make $1 million. All you got to do is just make a couple tweaks and then, you know, you scale up pretty fast. So I know I just verbally vomited on you, but, you know, hopefully that was some value.
No, that was incredible. I love taking notes while I'm listening to people, and I'm just a student of life. And what you said was fantastic. I talk, you know, I get a lot of successful people on this show, and a lot of people talk about the importance of coaching. Obviously, I love the sports analogies. Coaching is so important, but not all coaches are created equal. And I want to talk to you about, you had mentioned something a little bit ago about you didn't want not want to be a coach, but you've tweaked it in such a way that now you love it. Can you get a little bit more into what differentiates you from just traditional coaches?
Yeah. So I'll share this story because it's, you know, important. It's the origin of kind of how I developed this ideology. So, you know, I found a lot of success at a pretty early age. You know, I got started in real estate at 18. By 23, I had 87 apartments. And so there was a lot of, you know, real estate investing education companies that were nationwide that started asking me to teach and train, right? And be one of their instructors. So I found myself traveling a lot, right? Which, by the way, being 23 years old and traveling four or five cities a week where there's hundreds of people that are there to see you, not a very good thing for your ego, you know, especially when you have ladies coming up to you every night and asking you where you're staying, right? Which thankfully I just, you know, went to my hotel room and read my Bible, right? But, you know, I remember like I started noticing a pattern, right? I love what Tony Robbins says, right? He says, you know, the three things in life, I think, is to notice patterns, like understand patterns. It's to monetize off of patterns and also create patterns. Like, I think those are the three things that he said. But I started noticing a pattern. I started noticing that these people who were paying like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, sometimes $60,000 for a real estate education,
that's right,
weren't doing deals. Nope. Like, they weren't succeeding. And like, there was one company that I was an instructor for, and they proudly boasted that they had the highest success rate, which was like 1.3%, which is like ridiculous in my opinion, right? Like, can you imagine if there was a university that only 1.3% of students got jobs when they got degrees? Like, dude, we would shut that place down so fast, right? Like, it'd be ridiculous. And so I started asking myself, like, well, why is that? Like, why are only 1.3% of people succeeding? Like, clearly, they're not lazy. Like, they're showing up every single Thursday. They're putting in the work. Like, clearly, they're committed. If they're writing a check for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to be a part of this thing, right? And they're not stupid, right? Like, a lot of these people that I met, I was like, dang, like, you're a neurosurgeon and you're here? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, go out, save the world, right? And there's, you know, plenty of amazing people. But I started noticing a pattern with the people that did succeed, right? Like, with the 1.3% of people that I would meet it from time to time, I started noticing that there was a pattern. And I started realizing that the biggest reasons why people didn't succeed, why 98.7% didn't succeed, is because they had all the knowledge. It had nothing to do with what they knew, right? Like most people, when I ask, you know, real estate, like, what do you think you need to succeed? Everyone's like, well, I need the knowledge. Not true. Not true at all, right? All those people had the knowledge, but a lot of them, most of them didn't know how to convert that knowledge into a strategy. That was the big gap that I saw in a lot of people. And the 1.3% of people that did succeed, the overwhelmingly directly correlated reason was that those 1.3% of people were either A, entrepreneurs already, like they already had another business that they were taking care of and they just applied the same framework, or they were salespeople, right? Yeah. So there, it was one of those two things, like almost every single time. The one, like I had maybe one or two outliers that succeeded that I saw. And by the way, my schedule at that time is for me to do a training in downtown Chicago on Monday night and then wake up 4 a.m. the next day and go to LA. And then the next day, you know, go to Seattle and then go to Philly and then come back to Chicago on Friday and do another training. Like I'm seeing thousands and thousands of people every single week. And I'm just, you know, collecting data at this point. Right. But that was the big thing. So for me, that's what made me decide to be a coach. I was like, wow, like these people are spending a lot of money and all they're really receiving are just video courses. There's no change in who they are. There's no change in how they think and how they approach in their framework. Like, dude, in hindsight, like what I know today, for my first deal, I probably need to know 5% of what I know today about real estate to accomplish my first deal, right? To do a first deal for anyone. And I think there's more than plenty of information that's out there to help someone do their first deal in real estate. Like you can go on YouTube, you can listen to podcasts, you can read books. And I can assure you that you will get enough information to go out and do your first deal, right? The challenge was, and where I decided to create a coaching company around, is helping people turn that knowledge into a framework, a strategy, and helping them be real estate entrepreneurs as opposed to do real estate deals. Like that's our mission statement for First Deal Mentor is, you know, we don't help people to do deals. We equip and we empower people to be real estate entrepreneurs. That means helping them be better humans, be better fathers, be better mothers, be better brothers, leaders, husbands, wives. Like that's what we believe. So our coaching product mainly, like, yeah, we have videos, you know, like most education companies, they boast about having a 200-hour curriculum or whatever. We proudly boast that ours is only 18 hours because it's no fluff. We get straight to the point. Hey, here's exactly what you need to do to succeed and create success for yourself, right? But our main product is actually our weekly calls, our one-on-one success calls, our events that we do. And we bring in neuroscientists, we bring in top psychologists, we bring in other entrepreneurs to talk about how we can rewire our brain to start thinking like an entrepreneur. So that way, boom, off you go, right? And then we also help create. So we have these events too called Decade in the Day once a month where we actually bring people in our office and all day I spend and I help them create their strategy and their framework. So we do it on all different angles, right? And we have a pretty good success rate. I think our success rate is like 38%.
That's incredible.
Dude, I need to get that to like, I want to get it to like a 90, right? Like legit. So we're still working, we're still improving, right? We're still getting better, right? Learning how to do things at a higher level, so to speak. But I think that's the magic pill, if you want to call it that, for any entrepreneur, whether you're in real estate, whether you're an investor, whether you're starting a business, is learn how to take the knowledge that you're accumulating and convert it to a strategy, action items, daily habits, and rhythm. If you can do that, then I think success will find you a lot faster than it does a lot of other people.
That's incredible. You got me wanting to sign up right now. For those of you,
I hope that wasn't the intent, by the way. I'm just sharing, right? Like I'm just
sharing. It's incredible. You're getting 20 times the results of a lot of those companies. And I know those companies. Thank goodness I never fell for that $30,000, $50,000
trap. I unfortunately did.
I fell for one of them, not that heavy financially, but you know it's a crazy industry when you're in it. And like you said, these people are smart people. They're successful. Yeah, they're like neurosurgeons and lawyers and doctors, and they're motivated. They wouldn't be there on a Saturday and a Sunday doing all day classes if they weren't motivated. But yeah, it's incredible how you guys are able to get results with your clients as opposed to focusing on money. And that's that really comes down to your mission. Your mission isn't about making money. Obviously, money is a tool and a vehicle to get you to where you want. However, you say this on your website that your mission is empowering every American family to have financial peace of mind. And when you have a mission like that, and we didn't touch much on mission, but it's so important to have a good, clear mission, because that's going to guide you to where you want to go. When you hit a roadblock or a bump in the road, which you're going to hit no matter what, you can look at your mission. I love that you guys talk about that, because if your mission was just to make all the money you can, then yeah, you would be making probably more money, but you wouldn't have the success rate that you already have at such a young age with your clients. And so it's so powerful. So people listening, what's the best way to get a hold of you? What's the best way to start a conversation if people are interested in the services that you guys provide?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, you could just simply go to thequackbrothers.com. You could also just go to firstdealmentor.com. You know, also, I have a lot of people that DM me on Instagram. So if you want to just follow my personal Instagram, which is the Daniel Kwok, which, by the way, in hindsight, saying that out loud is very narcissistic. But Daniel Kwok was, I don't know, there was a lot of Daniel Kwoks out there, man. There's I think, 2.7 billion Asian people on the planet. So I'm not very original with my name, apparently. But my username on Instagram is just the Daniel Kwok. And, you know, if you want to find me and DM me with a question, you know, I typically, I answer back on DMs, you know, pretty soundly. I check pretty often. So if people have any questions or thoughts, or, you know, they want to give me any criticism or feedback on this podcast, then great, you know, shoot it my way.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. All right. Now the superhero fun part of the show. Do you have a superhero name? And if you don't, what would it be?
Oh gosh. Well, if I was a superhero, what would it be? Man, honestly, my favorite superhero is Captain America, right? But I don't think I would have a superhero name. Yeah, no, probably not.
Special K?
Oh, Daniel, well, that's
Special
good.
K Kwok?
Oh, that's very good. Dude, that's awesome. There it is.
This is kind of my jam, so to speak. But also, I think a lot of this goes overlooked. I love that Captain America is your favorite superhero, and actually you're taking away one of my later questions. But for those listening, you being an immigrant, Superman is the original immigrant superhero. And people see him as, America's hero. He might not be Captain America, but he was an immigrant who came, I guess, from another planet. So
right.
I do see a lot of Superman resemblance in you as well.
Nice. Thank you.
All right. We talked about attributes, things like that earlier, superpowers. What are some of your superpowers?
I would say my superpower is I simply, and this is what I love, this is my role at the Kwok Brothers, right? Is I simply help our leaders be the best version of themselves. That's it. Right. So I would say my three superpowers is casting a vision, being a visionary, building long-term relationships, and helping our team members be the best version of themselves.
That's incredible. You are empowering people just to be what is already inside of them. The whole premise of why I started this, just real quick, is that I believe everybody is a superhero. But we all have muscles, right? But if you don't go to the gym, you're not going to build up those muscles, right? So we are all born as superheroes. We all have gifts. But if we're not willing to first find what those are, what really speaks to us, our mission, our purpose, but then also at the same time, we talk about daily discipline, daily rituals, and building up those muscles. So it's great that we're all born as superheroes, but if we don't take control of our lives and work on those every day, then we're not going to be the superheroes that we were meant to be and live the lives we were truly meant to be. And I just love how empowering others through vision and through them, making them to be the best versions of themselves. Empowerment, that is such a huge superpower. I really appreciate you sharing that. And the last question is, who are your superheroes, favorite superheroes? You had mentioned Captain America. How about some real life superheroes?
Man, probably, my wife's one of them. And the reason why I say my wife is because, both of us, obviously being followers of Jesus, she's very simple and childlike in her faith. And, you know, I think a lot of Christians, especially today, we need more of that. You know, like I know guys who could tell you all the theological gambits, and I'm one of them, right? But, you know, when it comes to just loving your enemies, they don't do that very well. When, you know, Jesus told us not to worry, well, they do that very well. And it's just amazing how Jesus kept things simple, right? And we tend to make things so complicated. So I say my wife is one. My brother's another one. Man, like he's very complimentary in his skills to mine, right? So it's like I'm the visionary, but man, he knows how to create and build a system that's really efficient for things to run. You know, like I always say, if him and I started a business separately, he'd be the first one to make a million. Like he'd out entrepreneurship me by a mile, you know. So my brother's another one. And I say honestly, you know, people on our leadership staff, you know, I mean, it's just inspiring to see their yearning to want to grow every single day. And for me to be able to walk alongside them, it's a journey, man. It's an honor. So
I love that, man. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I feel like it's easy sometimes for us to look outwards of great people throughout history. And you had mentioned Abraham Lincoln, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King is another one. And these are great people to aspire towards and be like, but there's something to be said about the people that are in your life. You know, Jim Rohn says you are the five people you spend most of your time with. And so for people, you do a really good thing. Another superpower is, like you said, relationships, not just for the people, your clients, people that you lead in your business, but how you do it yourself. So your wife is a superhero of yours. Your brother is a superhero of yours. Your leadership staff, all the people, your mentor seems like that guy is a freaking superhero as well. You're putting all these people in your life, surrounding yourself with the people that you love and admire. Tony Robbins, I'm a big fan of him too. He's like, we raise to the level of the expectations of our peer group.
Yeah.
More or less. And so what that really means is, why are Marines so dangerous and capable when they are active and around other Marines, but then when they retire or move on and they get around, whether it's their hometown or where have you, where the expectation of their peer group isn't as high, they don't seem to be getting the same results that they did when they were just capable, dangerous people in their military career. So it's no wonder people, you know, Tony Robbins, again, success leaves clues. You are leaving clues with our audience. Surround yourself with those people you admire, people that are going to raise your game. It's so important to do things like that. And I just really appreciate you sharing all of that. A couple other quick questions before we go here. We had talked about time. I think you're probably around 9 a.m.-ish, a little before 9 a.m. In your...
I'm at 8:24 a.m. exactly.
8:24, there we go.
I did the math, actually. Sick, but I did the math.
I love that. What do you see happening in the next 5 to 10 years of your life?
Oh, man, I don't know. I actually was telling a buddy of mine the other day, I got to a point where, like, I stopped having goals. And it sounds weird, right? But, you know, for both of us as followers of Jesus, right, what does he say in the scriptures, right? Whenever somebody asks him, hey, like, what's your purpose? What's your mission? All he said was, hey, I'm just here to do the will of my Father, right? He actually says it on 4 different occasions throughout the Gospels, right? He says that I'm here to do of the will who sent me. And he also says on other occasions, I'm here to do the will of my Father, right? And so for me, man, I've come to enjoy the freedom and the gift of what it means to wake up every single day and just ask God, what do you have of me today? You know, what is the will of the one who sent me? Because God's the one who sent me. You know, I do believe that God sent it, and all of us, you know, on this earth to have a purpose and a mission to do something, to accomplish something for his kingdom. And so, you know, I live in a way, my friend, where, you know, I mean, sure, it's fun to think about where we'll be in 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, or 40 years. My wife and I, we talk about that a lot. Our leadership staff, we dream about that a lot. But at the end of the day, man, my posture is, you know, I just show up every single day doing what God's asking me to do.
That's right. You said something very important too. Ask and ye shall receive. And I feel like a lot of people don't ask enough for what they want. Wake up every morning. Like you said, I pray every morning. Moment my eyes open, and I just love how you ask God every day, how can I serve you today? And if you ask, he's going to come back and tell you every single day.
So it might not always be comfortable. It might not always be easy.
We're not in control. We've never been in control. Is just an illusion. And so the quicker people recognize that, the easier and more relaxed we can be. And then that's when the fun starts happening. That's when the magic really starts to happen. All right.
Yeah.
So we covered a whole lot of ground today, but if there is one thing, one tool, one word of advice, just one takeaway for the audience, what would it be?
Man, great question. I'd say increase your standard of excellence. That's what I would say. You know, I mean, so much of success happens from rejecting the status quo of your current situation. And one of the thoughts that I was thinking about is how most people accept what they despise. Mm. Like the mediocrity that people think that they have in their life. Like whether you hate the car you drive or you hate the job you work. Well, guess what, man? You accepted it.
Yeah.
You know, like most people hate what they tolerate and what they accept.
We get in life what we're willing to tolerate.
Yeah.
I love that. Increase your standard of excellence. You have done that. And I just appreciate everything you've shared with me, with the audience today on Memorial Day, a day of complete gratitude for all the liberties and freedoms that we have in this country. And I am just so blessed and honored to have you here. So, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on today.
Likewise, man. It was an honor.
All right. Or for those of you who are listening, Superhero by Design, thank you once again for spending your time with me and my wonderful guest, just like Daniel. You could be spending it anytime, anywhere, but you chose to spend it with us. So thank you very much. And remember that with great power, there must also come great responsibility. And like that, he's gone. Peace out.